Lunar Science. Welcome to Lunar Science, the series in which we discuss the scientific investigation of the Moon and its environment in the Artemis era. Scientists in the United States are not the only ones interested in lunar science. In episode 10, we give folks from Canada, Europe, Japan, and Australia a chance to explain their involvement. First, to the Canadian Space Agency, where Martin Bergeron is the manager of planetary science and space astronomy missions. In May of 2020, he gave this description of the LEAP, the Lunar Exploration Accelerator Program.
What I'm really here to talk about today is the second but much smaller component of a lunar program, which is the Lunar Exploration Accelerator Program, or just in short, LEAP. I'll be using that acronym throughout. So it's a program really to foster innovation in areas of strength in Canada. We cannot afford to do everything. We're not going to be looking or considering large missions on our own. But we have some know-how in artificial intelligence, obviously robotics, and in some areas also areas of science and health in general. So the idea here is to support whenever feasible commercialization of innovative ideas from the Canadian industry, in particular in focusing on small and medium-sized businesses and academia. So obviously we're trying to do three things with this program. To enable the Canadian space sector to develop and conduct science experiments, so designed specifically for the Moon, but also for beyond the Moon. Advance and demonstrate innovative technologies in lunar orbit, so it's really a demonstration component of it. And then to begin to develop technologies that will be required as part of a future deep space missions, probably with, you know, maybe Canadian astronauts over the horizon. So for us, it's really a first. We're kind of tongue in the cheek here and being a bit over the top in saying that we were the first boots on the Moon with the Apollo 11 landing gear, but more realistically, this is really our first attempt to do something, not in planetary exploration, but of course on the Moon lunar surface. So what is LEAP in summary? So it's a $150 million investment to be spent over the next 5 years. It's really for the Canadian space sector to conduct science experiments, as I've mentioned, prepare for robotic and human missions, advance, demonstrate innovative technologies, and demonstrate early development of technologies required for future deep space missions. So we have, what I really want to convey here is that we have an experience with trying to deliver on a very limited budget, some not full missions, obviously, it's too expensive for us, but some key instrument that can support our partner-led missions. So what I want to convey is that we're building on capabilities here, so it's not ab initio. Canada has demonstrated, obviously, capacity with mobility systems, some LIDARs, we've mentioned that, with OLA, spectrometers both in the high energy domain, but also in the optical domain, some space weather instruments, which we have some strength in, and also some software and some other elements. Next, if you hit, there's also an objective with the LEAP program to support the Canadian planetary science community at large, with first drafting of a lunar science plan, which I'm sorry to say we don't have yet. So all of our goal is really to focus on smaller initiative. The primary element of the LOBG, this is the Canada Army, is we catering to the larger industry in Canada. So the program LEAP is really focused on supporting the smaller players. So just a brief word on the science driver. As I said, we don't yet have a fully developed lunar science plan. This is more of a general. So as I said, we still don't have a prioritized science plan, but it's the goal to be achieving that within the next few years. The next stage of iteration to this plan is due in September or at least autumn 2021, where we'll revisit our priorities and hopefully design them specific to the moon.
Bergeron foresees many mission possibilities for LEAP.
So some look at the LEAP mission. So its mission is maybe an exaggeration here. We're really talking about payloads. And from that, we learned that essentially two-thirds of the proposals are really targeting really small, not very costly at all, something of the order of 10 million Canadian dollars or less. So that's in that mindset. So don't construe that these are going to be extremely complex, extremely challenging, multi-payloads, essentially missions. It's really just small, targeted payloads for the mode within the program element. So with that in mind, let's take a look at potential destinations. So destinations is not fixed. We're not at that stage. We're just opening up our options right now. So destination is not fixed. An option would be a CubeSat, perhaps even NanoSat class orbiter, total mass not exceeding 15 kilograms. And even that's going to be challenging for us with a small LEAP budget. But of course, you know, it's a prime advantage for global coverage. And most importantly, it might enable some longer duration mission, given the very short duration of surface missions. So primary science target could be anything from the list of science drivers. Primary interest would be, of course, you know, lunar volatiles or even lunar ice or in permanently shadowed regions. More probable, yes, would be the launch of a science and a tech demo payload with destination to the lunar surface. Payload would then be up to a 10 kilogram mass and be considered what either sitting on the top of a static lander or be looking over the horizon, again, for lunar volatile surface geology. While I'm showing here a South Pole lunar location, it's really not being determined at this point. Obviously, there's some good reasons to go there, but there are other options, such as equatorial or even the North Pole could be considered. We're still at an early stage looking at all the technology that could be applicable to essentially a variety of destinations and locations, so we're not constrained when it's going to be time to find a partner to get to the surface of the moon. Perhaps our main mission would be a micro rover in the 25 kilogram class, which is being considered. We had a federal stimulus package started back in 2008, which allowed us to develop a wide variety of surface mobility demonstrators that have been tested so far in analog missions, but we have yet to demonstrate it into real world environment. So in this case, one of the key mission driver is, of course, beyond its mobility, obviously, but if we can make it happen within the budget, we're looking at lunar night survival without the need, of course, to resort to the costly RTGs. Here, there would be some room for a Canadian science instrument, less than 5 kilogram, perhaps more, 3 kilogram, and also some allocation for a partner led science instrument of the same size. So overall, LEAP, as defined, would be at most one micro rover on a CLPS mission, hosting both a Canadian and a U.S. science payload, and then one or two additional science payloads to some other location on the moon. So the actual number of science instruments will really depend on our will to balance the need between having the most capable instrument, therefore a costly instrument, but essentially affording it and not putting all our eggs in the same basket. So that's about the LEAP payloads. We're considering.
Across the Atlantic, the European Space Agency's James Carpenter has been mapping out what science can be done at the moon.
So what I wanted to talk to you about today was where ESA's at the moment regarding science at the moon and our plans for that, where that's integrated into exploration. So, of course, the exploration of the moon goes way beyond just the science. So, we there's the technology aspects and the public engagement and the political aspects and international cooperation and space resources. But I'm going to focus on the science part. So, I would like to start by giving you, a view of where ESA is with regards to plans for the moon and what we're working on right now. So I'll start with the Orion European Service Module. So this is the module that provides the power propulsion and life support elements to Orion. And ESA and Europe through ESA is partnering with NASA on this and providing that as an element of the Orion vehicle. So ESM-1, European Service Module 1, has been delivered and integrated for Artemis 1. We're working now on ESM-2. We're looking forward to getting ESM-3 ready too. We're also working on the Gateway, so we're building up an international habitat for Gateway, or working with international partners on international habitat for Gateway, and also working on other elements and technologies for communication, refueling and other things for Gateway too. And very excited to be working with international partners, NASA, JAXA, CSA, on to providing some of the first scientific payloads for Gateway. I'm working on that too. Again, looking at science that's going to really help define some of the risks and to do with the radiation and the space environment for future human exploration. But we're also, and through that, we're also looking forward to the longer term sustainability part of lunar exploration and how we learn on the moon about going onwards to Mars. Down at the surface, we are interested, like everybody else, in volatiles and ices at the lunar poles, both the science that they have to offer, but also their potential utility as resources for future exploration. And so we've been working on a payload system called Prospect, I'll talk a bit more about in a moment, and partnering with our Russian colleagues on the Luna 27 mission to get some key measurements down at the lunar surface in the polar regions. We're also now starting two new projects, or two new developments. One is on the Cislunar Transfer Vehicle. This would be a system to move payload systems around Cislunar space. And the other is what we call the European Large Logistics Lander, or EL3. And that's a lander designed to take about 1.5 tons of cargo to the lunar surface. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment as well. And just to put a bit of meat on those bones, I think the key thing here is that ESA is already a partner in Artemis. We're very excited and privileged to be involved in this very, very exciting endeavor. And we're looking forward to deepening that partnership as we move onwards and down to the lunar surface in the next years. So I talked about the European Logistics Lander. This is something that we're starting work on now. We expect that this can realistically be ready in the latter half of the 2020s. This would be a lander that is launched on a European launch vehicle, the Ariane 6-4, and that defines the payload capability that this lander could have, and we expect around 1.5 tons of payload to be deliverable to the surface. The intention with EL3 is that this is a multi-purpose vehicle. It's something that we can use to deploy cargo to support human crews and sustained lunar surface activity, but it's also something that could be used to deploy self-contained standalone scientific robotic missions, working again in synergy with the activities that are going on at the surface using crew. And we're very excited also to explore the integration of those two things. How can we combine both robotic and human elements to create integrated human robotic missions? So in addition to preparing these sort of big system elements like the lander, Gateway, Orion, European Service Module, we're also looking at early payloads that we can use to discover and prepare for participation in this sustained lunar activity later on. So we don't want to wait until the late 2020s for our first access to the surface and to really participate in this. And so the intention is here we build up some core payloads for technology and for science and work with international partners to support missions that are led by them. So I mentioned earlier the Luna 27 mission led by Roscosmos. And for that mission, you see a rendering of that here. And the package that you see is something called Prospect. And Prospect is something which combines exploration goals to understand the abundance, distribution, and utility of polar ices with the science that these can offer to about the delivery of volatiles in the inner solar system and the origins and evolution of those things. What you see here is a drill, which will drill a meter beneath the surface. The system can then take samples from different depths beneath the surface and deliver those into a comprehensive scientific laboratory, which will look at the basic chemistry that's in there and the abundance of those volatiles, but can also heat those samples to very high temperatures, allowing reactants to be introduced to the samples to perform some ISRU experiments into some basic ISRU processes. But it also provides a very comprehensive analytical package for analyzing the volatiles that come off, to provide very accurate isotopic information on the chemistry that's coming off as well, which can tell us more about the origins and evolution of that chemistry. So this is like one example of something where we're really building an expertise in accessing and understanding polar ices and handling those ices. And we're hoping that that can feed forwards to future engagement in activity at the pole about understanding and eventually utilizing ices at the pole for exploration. We're also working on technologies for ISRU and looking at other payloads to understand the processes that could be applied to split oxygen from metals from lunar regolith to produce usable products in the future. We're working on other scientific payloads that could be deployed on the lunar surface with partner missions, both robotic and potentially human too. We're very interested in the opportunities that are going to come up through through Artemis and through the other missions of international partners in advance of the EL3 and the larger contributions that we'd be able to make there. So last year we went through a similar exercise to what was described in NASA, and we put together a panel of scientists, and we went into the literature, of which there is much, and looked into what were really the top scientific questions, the top scientific areas of things to be done at the surface of the moon, and where were the European priorities and particular capabilities in these areas. So in Europe, we have a very broad, diverse, and very deep experience in the science of exploration. And so we wanted to really understand what were our priorities going to be and what did we want to achieve by 2030. So the first thing we'd like to do is to make sure that new samples from previously unexplored locations that are of high interest are delivered to laboratories on Earth. So we have an extensive network of analytical laboratories within Europe who have a lot of experience of working on Apollo samples. And a very significant fraction of Apollo sample allocations today go to research in Europe. And we're very grateful to NASA for being able to make that possible. We also want to understand polar ice and volatiles. I'm sort of working on that as I've described. We also have a tremendous experience in geophysical instruments. And so deploying geophysics instruments at the lunar surface to understand the deep interior of the moon is of very high importance. And we would like through that to be able to contribute to a global network of geophysics instruments to really provide a comprehensive view of the lunar interior. Identifying lunar resources is very important. And there's a lot of crossover here between strategy for what we'd like to do in terms of science, but also what we want to do for space resources. So the first step in being able to perform real in-situ resource utilization is to understand the resources that are there. And so this is where science and scientific instrumentation has a really important role to play in saying, what are the resources, where are they, and what are the key challenges and opportunities around those resources that we would need to understand better before we can then actually go in and start to utilize them. Then we also understand that the far side of the moon is probably the only place in the solar system where you can't see the Earth in radio, and is a really important place for doing long wavelength radio astronomy. And so we really like to be involved in the first radio astronomical observatory on the lunar far side. Of course, the moon is also has a number of unique environments, and so we'd like to understand the environments that exist on the moon in terms of dust and radiation, the interactions between the surface and the exosphere and solar magnetic field and the Earth's magnetic field, and to understand this integrated environment and how it works as a model for surface-bound exospheres and airless planetary bodies everywhere. And of course, at some point, we'd like to put humans into these environments. And so we would like to understand the biological effects that come with that, both for humans and for the important biology that travels with us. And so we would like to be involved in and engage in experiments and investigations at the lunar surface by 2030 to address all of these different areas. But of course, as well as robotics, humans are our most powerful scientific tool. And so a lot of effort has gone in over quite a number of years into trying to understand how we can make the most of the humans that we send to the surface of the moon. I've heard many times over the phrase of robots human partnership, and I think this is the theme of our program. is that it combines human exploration and robotic exploration and seeks to get the best out of both of those things. And so we're very much looking forward to having humans and robots partnering at the surface, but also partnering with our international partners on what is going to be an extremely exciting decade at the surface of the moon. And we look forward to seeing you there. Thank you.
In that 2020 talk, James Carpenter mentioned Russia's Lunar 27 lander. 2 months later, he expanded on the Prospect instrument.
Okay, so I want to talk about Prospect, which is a package which is in development in ESA. And we envisaged some years ago that there would come a time in the early 2020s when there was really an international effort to explore and understand the lunar poles and to understand the distribution of water, ice and other volatiles, both for science and for exploration. And so we started developing Prospect with that in mind to perform an assessment of the volatile inventory in the near surface regolith. And in contrary to Viper, which is really a mobile platform, we were trying to understand from a stationary platform where we didn't have mobility, how can we get the most out of measurements that we would make there? So currently Prospect is in phase CD development for Russia's Lunar 27 mission, which is planned for launch in 2025. And we're also very excited to be discussing with NASA at the moment about the possibility to fly Prospect as part of a future joint NASA-ESA polar delivery. The objectives that Prospect is designed to address, specific to volatiles, understanding their inventory, their locations, their abundance, their isotopes, where they're from, looking both at chemisorbed and physisorbed. Some of these are also looking at the possibility that there's organics present and can we identify whether there's organics present. So what we're going to do is we want to drill down to depths of what, 1 meter, at very low temperatures. You want to characterize the environment at those depths and then extract volatiles and determine the abundance, the composition, including the isotopics, and the origins of the volatiles that we find there, both cold trap volatiles and chemisorbed volatiles. And we're also able to perform some investigations into some ISRU processes. It's a little bit of an adjunct to the volatiles question, but the laboratory is also able to. We have a drill. The drill drills down to up to 1 meter. We extract samples. So we take 2 samples, a larger sample, which is then delivered to the Russian instruments on Luna 27, and a 100 milligram sample, which we use for the PROSPER analysis. And PROSPER is our analytical laboratory. Whilst drilling and downhole, we measure the torque that's associated with drilling to give us geotechnical information. We also measure the temperature in the subsurface and the electrical permittivity at the depths where we're drilling. Samples are then deposited into a solid inlet system where they're sealed. The heated samples then evolve gases, and the gases pass into our laboratory. We have an ion trap mass spectrometer provide a broad sweep chemical analysis, and then a gas processing system which allow us to separate and process those gases to make them suitable for isotopic measurements in our magnetic sector mass spec.
The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, JAXA, has had a deep and ongoing involvement in the International Space Station. In the past, it has put spacecraft into orbit around the moon, most notably Kaguya, that transmitted to Earth high-definition video of the moon at a time when high-definition television was but a thought bubble in the mind of broadcasting executives around the world. No surprise, then, that JAXA has grabbed willingly at the chance to participate in the Artemis program. Masaki Fujimoto discussed JAXA's lunar surface exploration activities as they existed in mid-2020.
So this shows the global exploration scenario of JAXA. We have the International Space Station element, we have the lunar element, and we also have the Mars exploration element. So what I will be focusing on today is, of course, the lunar element. And then I'd like to start with the CubeSat plan. This is the world's smallest moon lander, I guess. It has a name. The mission has a name, Omotenashi. And so what it does is that it will be launched by the SLS, one of the CubeSats, and it will go into the orbit around the moon. And then it has a solid motor by which the orbiting will happen. And then it also carries an airbag. So what this mission does is to deorbit the small CubeSat from onto down onto the surface of the moon and make a semi-hard landing. So when this technology is proven to be successful, that's gonna enable the way to deliver small elements to the surface of the moon, and that may enable a multi-point observation in with a very small cost. And for this particular mission, we have a radiation monitor on board, but that's more or less for the technology demonstration. And the idea is to see how this infrastructure work for delivering small unit to the surface of the moon. Then later on, we have a more, sophisticated way of landing on the moon. The first one has the name SLIM, Smart Lander for Investigation of the Moon. This SLIM mission is another technology demonstration. It's a demonstration of pinpoint landing on the surface of the moon. It's a small lander. Its dry weight is only 200 kilograms, so it's pretty small. But its landing accuracy, it's a pinpoint landing. But what I mean by that is it has the landing accuracy up to 100 meters. So if you find a spot that seems to be interesting, but if that spot is relatively small, within 100 meter radius or something, then this kind of technology become very useful, because then you have to really pinpoint landing there and do some interesting observations. For this particular SLIM mission, we are going to land next to a rock that shows an olivine-rich feature, and then because we are landing next to the rock itself, we're going to make a microscopic observation of the rock, from which mineralogical observation we can learn more about the composition of the deep interior of the moon. So, finding an interesting rock, then land next to it and make a microscopic observations. SLIM technology should enable such, lightweight, relatively low cost investigation of lunar science. You can sense that its attitude on the surface of the moon looked rather weird. And yes, you're right, because SLIM is aiming at gaining the pinpoint landing technology. And it also tries to obtain the technology that makes a lander to be ready to land on the slope. So what I mean by this is that this slide shows the way the SLIM will make the landing. We call it a two-step landing procedure. So you're hovering above the surface first, and then as you get closer to the surface, you tilt the spacecraft, and then you touch the ground with only main leg first. We're not gonna be the SLIM spacecraft. We're not gonna be standing on the moon, but instead it's gonna be lying on the surface. So the merit of having this two-step landing procedure is that you can really land safely on the slope, in the slope region. So there are two technology demonstrations to be made by SLIM. It's one is the pinpoint landing, and the other is this two-step landing procedure that enables a lander to land safely on the slope region, in the slope region. Once we gain the pinpoint landing technology, that should enable us for thinking about landing in the polar region, because land in the polar region, you can be landing in the permanently shadowed region, sitting next to the permanently illuminated region, and it's better to, you have to land in the favorable region, otherwise your lander or rover will be dead. So once you get the pinpoint landing technology, I think you have the green to go for the to land in the favorable region. So that's why next to SLIM, we have the plan to go to make the polar landing mission. This is what this mission is about. So the objective is, of course, obtain the knowledge of water resources on the moon, and that's why we go to the polar region. And the mission, this mission will explore lunar polar region suitability for establishing a lunar base for sustainable activities. And we're thinking of partnering with Indian Space Agency, and we have been conducting the joint study for a while. Launcher will be from us, the lander will be from India, and then the rover will be from JAXA. For the instrument on board the rover, we have the plan to make an international consortium for the instruments. We have been talking with ESA as well as NASA so that we can have a best instrument from all over the world to explore the polar region. So this should give the U.S. scientists another opportunity, science opportunity. And of course, this mission should have good synergy with VIPER, and that's the kind of a discussion we're having with our NASA colleagues as well. We are also thinking about the future of where full-fledged human expression will happen on the surface of the moon.
Japan has set up a space exploration innovation hub to foster commercial collaboration. Japanese car and truck manufacturer Toyota has its eyes on securing the contract for a pressurized rover to carry astronauts as far as 10,000 kilometers across the moon. Masaki Fujimoto explains.
Within the JAXA organization, we have a body by the name Space Exploration Innovation Hub Center, which is in charge of cooperation with the private companies that's interested in creating innovation technology for space exploration. But the point here, what's really unique about this center here is that we at JAXA are interested in utilizing the cutting edge technology to be developed through joint collaboration for space application. On the other hand, for the company partner, they are not necessarily interested in space market itself. They are more interested in terrestrial market. So the point here is that JAXA and the company will join forces together to develop a new technology. But then once the basic development is done, JAXA will bring it to the space application, but the company will go back to their business on Earth. So we work together, and then after we get some result, we get separated, and each will move on their own way that according to their own interest. So here we don't rely on space market itself. The company is interested in terrestrial market. And at given the stage where we are now, I think this is a practical approach, and which has been really successful. As I said before, we have a construction company interested in remotely controlled construction technology, which is, of course, useful for building a lunar base, but they are also interested in a terrestrial application because you can save the manpower even in the terrestrial market. And there's a toy company by the name Takara Tomy who's providing a mini robot and which can be useful for lunar exploration, of course. But they are also interested in, they themselves are not necessarily interested in lunar exploration, but they are more interested in creating a new toy that will amuse kids even more than now. And there's also an agri technology elements in this TANSA-X activity. There's a concept study for a lunar plant factory, but the company themselves might be interested in having an automated food factory or something, which I don't know the details. But, as I said before, they are not necessarily interested in space market itself, but there are some points where we can work together so that JAXA will gain the benefit for its space application into the future. Toyota, even at a bigger scale, JAXA is working together with Toyota to develop a human pressurized rover. It's a big one. The target year for its development, for its completion of the development, is 2029. So it's really a powerful big rover. You know, Toyota is really serious about this. It's not only JAXA, but it's it includes some NASA folks that's working together with Toyota for this nice rover to be available in the future full-fledged human exploration era.
Moving south to Australia, a joint Australian and United States group are planning ahead to the day when lunar mining begins. In August of 2021, they unveiled DUET, D-U-E-T, for Down Under Excavation and Transport.
Hello. Welcome to our overview of the Lunar Mining System, or LUMIS, proposed for the Lunar Surface Science Workshop by the Down Under Excavation and Transportation, or DUET, team. Our LUMIS team is an international group from Australia and the United States.
Our team is known as the Down Under Excavation and Transportation, or DUET, team. The LUMIS system is based on decades of Earth mining expertise applied to lunar mining using similar principles grounded in scientific soundness. We use tunnelers to mine the regolith and drag lines to move the regolith to the water processing plant. We then pump the water back to the delivery site for storage and use.
Our concept exceeds achieved stellar performance objectives and closes the technology gaps for mining rates, while providing a time-tested and ETH-proven system. LUMIS reaches 10,000 kilograms of water in only 50 days. In a full mission year, LUMIS produces over 87,000 kilograms of water. Our system, including the water plant, uses only 5.1 kilowatts. LUMIS is highly autonomous, with over 90% of operations being done autonomously based on our on-Earth experience. Our entire system has extensive design heritage on Earth. At the end of the mission, we turn over the hardware to other lunar explorers for use to further the sustainability of their lunar base. The LUMIS system offers a ratio of total water produced to system landed mass, including the water plant, of over 17 to 1. LUMIS not only closes technology gaps but slams the door.
LUMIS is packed on a payload carrier and integrated to the lander for launch, lunar transit and landing, the deployment using the robotic arm. The payload carrier is modeled after the ISS Express Logistics Carrier and serves as structural support, power, command and telemetry transmission. The hardware is packaged in only 9 components to simplify integration and deployment, as well as saving payload fairing volume. With a lower mass of LUMIS, the lander can fly additional payloads, showing the benefit to the overall international lunar campaign. Once deployed and configured, the system is ready to move.
Configuration of the system begins at the delivery site, including charging for the system to move to the excavation site. After charging is complete, a caravan of excavation equipment is transported to the excavation site. Common batteries are employed to make charging and swap out the most efficient use of charging cycles. And while rovers have different functions, they operate on common chassis for efficient maintenance and sparing.
A pipeline is run from the delivery site to the excavation site and water plant. The pipeline will transfer the water back to the delivery site and is heated to ensure the water stays in a liquid form.
We can access high water content regolith by clearing a tunneling area with a drag line, and then the tunnelers begin their work. Tunnelers are highly mobile, able to move to a new excavation field once cleared by the drag line. The dragline trailer, which connects to the tunnelers, collects the regolith to hoppers, which then transfer the regolith to the water plant. The tunneler tracks below the surface at a depth to reach the 10% water content regolith. With 3 rover chassis and 6 tunnelers, the LUMIS concept maintains high levels of sparing, as well as a continuous flow of regolith that leads to our 87,000 kg water production total.
The dragline trailer is filled via moving into the pile created by the brushes on the bottom of the tunneler. Once it is filled, the trailer is returned to the central dragline trailer.
The LUMIS developed by the DUET team from Australia and the United States provides Earth-proven solutions to be used on the Moon, with results that offer 17 times the yearly goal for amount of water to be produced based on autonomous systems. Thus, lunar plans are more achievable and sustainable. Leaving us to say, we broke the ice.